What do these people have in common? Take a look at them. Every one of these individuals have been canceled. Maybe you've heard of cancel culture. Cancel culture is the act of withdrawing support for public figures or companies after they've done or said something objectionable or offensive. We're starting a series today on cancel culture, and today we're going to talk about why cancel culture is even a thing. You know, the name cancel culture is new, but the concept is not. We've always been on the lookout for people who have and express views and morals that we think are inappropriate. Cancel culture has always been around. We just haven't called it that. The roots of present-day cancel culture, some say, go back to the Me Too movement. Others say that it goes all the way back to the civil rights era. Dr. Ann Charity Hudley, she's a PhD, and she is the chair of linguistics of Black American studies at University of California, Santa Barbara. And she described canceling culture as a survival skill as old as the Southern Black use of the boycott. The boycott. She goes on to say this: if you don't have the ability to stop something through political means, what you can do is refuse to participate. Canceling is a way to acknowledge that you don't have to have the power to change structural inequality. You don't even have to have the power to change all of public sentiment. But as an individual, you can still have power beyond measure. My understanding of cancel culture is this, that at the heart of cancel culture is a protest. Now, I grew up in the days of the 60s protest, the protest against Vietnam, civil rights protest, the protest of women to try to get equal rights. And the church of which I was a part in those days didn't care much for protest. Those who engaged in protest were seen by the church I was a part of as troublemakers, just a bunch of liberals causing problems. And today we're seeing plenty of protests for different things, and there are some in the church world today who still don't like protest. They are annoyed by it. They are angered by it. So, what kind of feelings arise up in you when you hear the word protest? Well, it could be determined by our race. I don't want to lose you there. Take a look at this. This is the headline from the Public Religion Research Institute. It says, most Americans believe protests make the country better. Support decreases dramatically among whites if protesters are identified as Black. They could go on to say this, the statistics. When Americans protest unfair treatment by the government, 67% of white Americans agree that it always makes our country better. But when Black Americans protest unfair treatment by the government, white American approval drops to 48%. Seriously, white folks? Are we really that way? So here's the deal. If you take away protesting, you take away Christianity. You take away Judaism. Judaism and Christianity have a rich history of protesters. I grew up in the Protestant church, the Protestant church. The entire Protestant movement was a protest against the church. Go back in the days of the Hebrew history, there was an activist by the name of Nehemiah who shook out the front of his garment as a dramatic event, an act of performance art. And he explained to the people in Jerusalem that God would shake out from their house everyone who refused to turn away from their exploitative lending practices. So Hebrew history is filled with people like Nehemiah, filled with colorful, creative, passionate protesters. And then there's Jesus and that little episode at the temple. John writes, the Jewish Passover was near, and so Jesus went up to Jerusalem. In the temple, he found people selling oxen, sheep, and doves, and he also found the money changers sitting there. After making a whip out of cords, he drove everyone out of the temple with their sheep and oxen. He also poured out the money changers' coins and overturned the tables. He told those who were selling doves, get these things out of here. Stop turning my house into a marketplace. Now, what do you think about that story? You know, many scholars debate this account. They don't debate whether or not it actually happened. It's one of the few events in the life of Jesus that's recorded by each of the four Gospels in the Christian New Testament. Now, the problem that the scholars debate is Jesus. This is not your meek and mild Jesus. Jesus is an aggressor, and his protest is violent. His protest is destructive. Jesus is protesting a religious system that is exploiting the poor. Among other abuses going on in the temple, priests were ripping people off by telling them who brought their animals for sacrifice that that animal was below the purity standard, didn't meet the purity standard. And so they were forced, the people were, to buy a temple-certified animal for sacrifice from the priest. And then the priest would take that substandard animal that was originally brought by the people and turn around and sell it to somebody else. Boy, there's just nothing right about that. It's interesting, I think important, to note that in every account of this event, Jesus focuses on the selling of the doves because the doves were the sacrificial animal brought by the poor people. It's the only animal that they could afford. And so Jesus here, his primary rebuke was toward these priests who were exploiting the poor people, taking advantage of them. And this system was especially hurting marginalized people, and it drove Jesus crazy. And Jesus protested, but he did not protest by standing quietly in front of the temple, holding up a sign that said, "Stop religious abuse." No, he protested by turning over the tables, by, with a whip, driving everyone out of the temple. Now, when I was a kid, I loved this story. It kind of reminded me of Marshal Matt Dillon throwing the bad guys out of the Long Branch Saloon, after which Matt would have a drink with Miss Kitty. I don't know if Jesus had a Miss Kitty or not, but I loved that action that Jesus had of throwing the bad guys out of the temple. Now, people take this story of Jesus and try to understand, in light of that story, the protest and the riots that we are seeing in our country today. For example, this meme: if anyone ever asks you, what would Jesus do? Remind them that flipping over tables and chasing people with a whip is within the realm of possibilities. So, forgive my voice, it's still a little bit bad, isn't it? Here's a question I'd like for you to ponder. Does Jesus' temple protest justify the violent protest that we see today? Think about that. I cannot really say that the two things are parallel. We're talking about a cultural and historical event that is 2,000 years removed from us. And it's always, I think, dangerous to take a biblical narrative and try to apply it exactly to our day today. Yet, there are some touch points between what happened in the temple and what's going on today. Number one, Jesus' protest was not peaceful. I don't think there's any way, is there, that you could read this story and conclude that it was a peaceful protest? But secondly, there's a little bit difference here in Jesus' protest and what we see today. Jesus protested the system, and he focused his protest and his destruction upon a building where injustices were taking place. Jesus did not loot a Target store, a neighborhood grocery store. And that's a very big difference that I see in the protest of Jesus and of today. And when I think of protests and riots, I cannot help but think of Martin Luther King Jr. This is what he said. In the final analysis, the riot is the language of the unheard. What is it that America has failed to hear? How do you answer that? What has America failed to hear that groups of people feel like they need to riot to make their voice known? And that statement from Dr. King was taken from his speech called The Other America that he delivered a few times in 1967 and 1968. In that speech, Dr. King did condemn rioting, but he also challenged his audiences to seriously hear the rioters, to seriously consider the experience of the rioters, the experience of the marginalized that would lead them to such action. He goes on in the speech and says this, "Social justice and progress are the absolute guarantors of riot prevention." Now that's a good statement, isn't it? If we want to stop riots, then we need to progress. We need social justice. I really like that statement. I also like this statement from John Lewis. Just not too long before he passed, Congressman Lewis said, "Be constructive, not destructive. History has proven time and again that nonviolent, peaceful protest is the way to achieve the justice and equality that we all deserve." Keep looking at that picture, and you, obviously you'll see him on the left side here, but you'll also see Mr. Lewis on the right side when he was attacked violently by the state police for his peaceful protest. Be constructive, not destructive. So let's look at Jesus in light of John Lewis. You know, at the very least, Jesus staged an aggressive, massive demonstration to critique and to disrupt an unjust system that was abusing people, very people that God loved. It's almost like Jesus had said, you know, enough is enough, and I just got to shut this thing down. Yes, destroying property is violent. But at the same time, will you not consider this statement? So too is ignoring the injustices done against people. So this teaching today is not designed to justify violence at all. It's not designed to justify riots. But I am trying to figure it out. I'm trying to figure out what would Jesus do today in light of what he already did yesterday in the temple. Personally, I'm trying to figure out how to best use my voice for change. I'm trying to do what David does in Psalm 51 and ask God to see if there is any wicked, is what David says, way in me. Is there any racist way in me? Is there any way in me that is marginalizing people? Well, while Jesus did what he did at the temple, it's in the record, I still see Jesus' heart as nonviolent. And from this story, this is how I want to live. I personally want to refuse returning violence for violence. I think there is a common thread through Scripture that we are to return a blessing for an insult. You know, when Peter defended Jesus, when Jesus was arrested by the soldiers of the high priest in the garden, and Peter took out his sword and cut the ear off of one of those soldiers. And Jesus looked at Peter and he said, "What are you doing? Put your sword away. Don't you know that if you live by the sword, you're going to die by the sword?" And I really think the drive of Jesus was to stop the cycle of violence. Not sure why he was violent at the temple. Not sure why he was destructive with that. I do think his heart was one of nonviolence. And I also want to seek justice. As Dr. King said, social justice is a guarantor of riot prevention. In Isaiah chapter 1, Isaiah goes into a lot of detail about how God feels about the people. He's really upset with the people. God's disappointed with them. And Isaiah talks about how much they've sinned. And he says that God doesn't want their worship. He doesn't want their worship songs. He doesn't want their sacrifices. And the people have sinned so greatly that everything else that they're doing is just empty. And then in verse 17 of chapter 1, Isaiah says, this is what God wants you to do, to reverse what was wrong, to correct what was wrong. And this is what verse 17 says. And this is what I want to do, and I hope you do too. This corrects what's wrong. Learn to do good. Seek justice. Rescue the oppressed. Defend the orphan. Plead for the widow. The orphans and the widows were representative in our day of everyone who just wasn't given a fair shake, marginalized. So all this stuff that God was so upset with Israel over, and they were trying to go ahead with their worship services and all their routines, religious routines. And God said, no, what you're going to have to do to make things right is to do justice and to rescue the oppressed. That's what I want to do. And I hope you'll join me in that effort. Have a really good day. Thank you.